Legoland Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti a Svizzera in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the second episode of the week of the Calcio Land podcast. This episode is brought to you by our great friends at Euro Fantasy Game, a place where you can read a lot of great Serie A content of John Solano, Enrico Passarella, known as the Guardaline, Chloe Beresford, Matt Santangelo, all covering Serie A. I'm going to be writing a bit more frequently on there, so look out for that. So on Tuesday, we did our first part of the Derby della Madonnina preview. We covered the Inter side of things at the end with my colleague Gabriele Romano. Today, we're going to do the same with Milan. We just recorded an excellent interview with Steve from Milan Weekly Pod. He's based in Montreal. It was a lot of fun, so check that out at the end of the podcast. Thousand Names is back, and man, is he fired up for his game predictions. We'll get to those and your usual great Twitter questions. We had some really good ones today. But before we get to that, I'm joined by our co-host, producer. His YouTube channel's blowing up, Alex Goldberg. So, Alex, on Tuesday, you and I talked about Icardi and Higuain. We talked about Donnarumma and Handanovic. The pretty standard stuff. So before I put you on the spot and get your game prediction on this, let me ask you, what are you most looking forward regarding Sunday's game? It really could be anything. Could be a matchup. Could be the choreography from the fans. And usually the ultras really put on a show for this. What are you looking forward to the most?
The approach, David, the approach. Because for me, it's a really interesting matchup going into it, meaning Inter have not lost in their last four. In fact, they're on a four-game winning streak. And Milan are on a two-game winning streak, but they haven't lost in their last six Serie A games. So both of these teams really don't want to lose because they haven't lost in a while. And as long as you don't get that loss, it still feels like you're at least moving forward without too many draws. So I would say Inter are certainly starting to turn it around. And I would say Milan, on the table, it looks like they're a lot lower than Inter. In fact, Inter are third and Milan are 10th. However, Milan are only 4 points behind them with a game in hand. So it really isn't that much at all. I just want to see how Milan are going to approach this. So what am I looking forward to the most? Is Gattuso going to try to just not lose to keep that streak going? Or is he going to go for the jugular and is he going to try to get all 3 points? Because all these points are important. I don't care if it's October or if it's March. It's all important. But I'm interested to see the approach. Both of these teams are going to be pretty much near full strength in terms of health. So how does Milan approach this game? If they get an early goal, do they all of a sudden kind of park the bus and just hold on for maybe 3 points, but at the very worst one? Or do they continue to try to attack? They got a very, very informed player right now in Suso. In fact, if anybody plays FIFA, he would have had his second straight Team of the Week card if FIFA didn't have a rule about giving two Team of the Week cards in a row. They just don't do that. Suso is on fire. So I want to see maybe if that international break maybe ruined some of these players' momentum. But overall, I want to see the approach. I want both teams to go for 3 points. However, I have this sneaky suspicion that both teams might play just not to lose. So, David, that's what I'm looking forward to, the approach. What about you?
Good answer. I have a feeling I know what your game pick is going to be. So, you know, for me, what's interesting is I think both teams would have rather played this game before the international break because they were on such a good streak. I think especially Milan. Now, Inter had a longer winning streak, but I thought the match against Spal, I don't know if they totally deserve to win that one, but 3 points is 3 points, and we know Inter, you know, they are pretty pazza Inter. So I'm curious to see which team's going to be penalized more from the international break. You mentioned Suso. He's been on absolute fire, did well for Spain. I want to see his counterpart at Inter, Perisic. Like, which Perisic is going to show up? We know there are some games where he doesn't really seem to have his head in the game. And other times where he's an absolute world beater, there are times where you're like, okay, Perisic is the best winger in Serie A. So let's see which Perisic shows up. I'm very curious to see the matchup in the midfield. I've been saying all season, to me, as Brozovic goes, So does Inter. I'm curious to see Frank Kessié, who's a very good defensive midfielder, what type of an impact he'll have on Brozovic. And Bilia on Milan is kind of similar to Brozovic. Like, usually if Bilia has a good game, that's when Milan looks really good. And the last thing that I'm really looking forward to is Musacchio. And we talked about it too in the interview you'll hear at the end. To me, Musacchio is one of the most interesting storylines in Serie A this season, because we know all the hype of Caldara joining Milan, and Juve fans, you know, I like Caldara, but some Juve fans were making it seem like, you know, Shirea was leaving the club. And, you know, obviously I like Caldara. I think it was very smart for Milan to get him. But I feel like Musacchio has become a really good problem to have. He's been really good this season. So I'm curious to see how he does against Icardi. So there are a lot of interesting storylines. I hinted at it at the questions too. I'm very curious to see the choreography. Technically, Inter's the home team at this one. I think Inter fans and Milan fans as well, they put on really a show before this match. So I want to see what we have to look forward there. So I'm just going to put you on the spot. I think I know what the answer is based on your previous analysis, but how do you think it's going to end up, Alex?
Yeah, I hinted at it pretty well then, I guess, because I think this is going to end up as a 1-1 draw. I don't know who's going to score first, but whoever scores first is going to all of a sudden play less attractive football. They're going to go for at least 1 point. The other team will equalize, maybe late, maybe at least be a little dramatic that some team will have 3 points ripped away from them. But I'm going to say a 1-1 draw, David.
So I'm going to give my pick when I'm going to start now. We have our great friend Thousand Names back. He took a week off. He is very energized. I think Juve fans might actually be surprised with his picks as well on Juve. But let's start with the derby. So as you guys know the rules, how this works, I asked Thousand Names to send me 3 predictions. I don't tell him which matches. He picks 3, sends them my way, and then I pick against them knowing the result, what he's going to pick, but he gets to pick the matches. So he did pick the derby as one of the 3, and he has Inter winning 3-0 with goals by Icardi, Brozovic, and Perisic. He says that Handanovic is going to stop a Higuain penalty kick, and that the fat magician, and that's his nickname for Higuain, is going to miss, you know, another penalty in his career. And he says that Inter is going to walk all over what's left of Gattuso, that Caldara's once again on the bench, and that Caldara is a bust that Leonardo foolishly bought from Juve. So he fired up on this for our listeners in Italy who are on pins and needles to hear what Thousand Names has to say. Inter Milan 3-0, Icardi, Brozovic, Perisic, Handanovic, Pararigora, Higuain. Mago Pancione ne sbaglia un altro, l'Inter passeggia sui resti di Gattuso, Caldara ancora in panchina, pacco preso da Leonardo. So Thousand Names now back in his hometown of Naples, and I think the hatred that the city had towards Higuain, which he hinted in, really good interview in today's Gazzetta dello Sport, if you haven't checked it out yet. Higuain had a lot of interesting things to say, including Napoli fans, and it seems like that has trickled on to Thousand Names. Now, I was very undecided on this because, as I mentioned, my rule in the derby, and not just the one in Milan, but especially in the one in Milan, is going with the underdog. It's hard to say really who is the underdog. And I put a lot of thought into it. I'm not going to go the easy route with a draw. I'm going to have Inter squeezing this out 2-1. I'm going to have Icardi and Politano with a goal, and I'll give Suso a goal. I'm sticking to my guns. I had Inter as the second best team in Serie A this season. Napoli has definitely done a lot to change my mind, but I think there is still a pretty substantial gap between Inter and Milan, and I think this is a match where Inter could show it. Maybe the fact that they are the home team, you know, with more of their fans in the stands should help as well. So the next pick from our friend Thousand Names, he picked that Napoli travels to Friuli to face Udinese. He has this game finishing 1-1. Hamsik and Mandragora as the goal scorers. And he says that Ancelotti's mind is already on the Champions League match against PSG. This is another year that Napoli isn't going to win the Scudetto and that they are a team without hope. It's pretty ironic that Thousand Names has Napoli punting Serie A to think about the Champions League. What a big change in Italian. Udinese Napoli 1-1, Amsic Mandragora, Ancelotti con la testa a Parigi, altro anno, altro scudetto che spuma, squadra senza speranza. I actually gonna have Napoli win here. Udinese, they had a spark when they started. They've been very unimpressive. It's been De Paul and Lasagna and really nothing else. I think Napoli has really impressed me. I think Ancelotti has enough depth, and he certainly has changed lineup every match, that I think even if his mind is a little bit on PSG, he can rotate enough. And I'm going to have Napoli winning 1-0, and I'll give a goal to our boy Milik. And so let's close the third and final game. Juve fans, you've been waiting for this. 1,000 names has Juve beating Genoa 3-0. Goals by Cancelo, Alessandro, Bernardeschi. But once again, 1,000 names loves to pick on Ronaldo. I'm glad he didn't make a comment on the off-field issues. I might have to censor him there. And he's like, Ronaldo's going to miss a penalty, that Matuidi's going to get a red card, but that Juric is going to be proof that the Genoa president Preziosi hired Juric specifically so he could mail it in against Juve and basically gift them the game. And he said that former coach Ballardini, there's no way he would have been part of this horrible game to give Juve the win. So in Italian, Juve Genoa 3-0, Cancelo, Alessandro, Bernardeschi, Ronaldo sbaglia rigore, espulso Matuidi, Juric assunto da Preziosi per scansarsi contro la Juve, Ballardini non si sarebbe prestato a questo schifo, vergogna. Okay, I'm going to agree, I think Juve is going to win here pretty decisively. I'll have it 3-1 Juve. I'm not going to give Piontek a goal. I'm going to give former Juve player Romulo, who barely scores, but I'm going to give him a goal here. I think Ronaldo's going to score a brace, and I'm going to give a goal to Cuadrado. Everyone knows that I like him quite a bit. So those are our game picks. I love it. We have some of our listeners that tweet us their picks right after listening to the podcast. Do it. There are some of you that are doing really well. If some of you keep having a really good streak, I will read your predictions ahead of time in a future podcast so we make it a little more interactive. And speaking of interactive, we get fantastic questions from our listeners. I know I say it all the time, but I keep getting more and more impressed with the questions. I consider you guys the co-writers of the podcast. You take us in a lot of different directions. So to send the questions, and we take them on Serie A. We're starting to get a good amount of transfer questions, music, TV, film, journalism. We have some good ones on that today. Send them, just tweet them using the CalcioLand hashtag. And which ones are we going to go over today, Alex?
All right, David, our first question is going to include something that I really can't pronounce. So let's have some fun here. Is there a derby you would consider to be similar to the Derby della Madonnina?
Wow, Alex, good pronunciation. You had Piontek correct last week. You nailed this one, so well done. So you guys know I'm not a huge expert of other leagues, so what I'm going to tell you is give you a description of how I view the Derby della Madonnina. And, you know, I've been in Milan a lot. I know a lot of fans of both teams. So hopefully this is a description that they think does them justice, and you can tell us which one sound the most like it. So I will say that this isn't a very heated rivalry in the sense of like very passionate, that can spill into violence, which unfortunately in some cases in Italy it does. I do think there are some much more heated rivalries than this. I would say right now Napoli and Roma, that's a much more heated match. For Fiorentina fans, the match against Juve is like the Super Bowl every year. For Milan and Inter, and I think this has to do with the fact that both clubs are really successful. And, off the top of my head, I'm not sure if there is a derby, not just in Italy, with two teams that are quite of this huge caliber. There's a lot more mutual respect. Even the fan bases, they refer to each other as cugini, so cousins, you know, from the same city. They support different teams, but they share a lot in common. So it's not the most heated. It's very respectful. I can't off the top of my head remember of any of this like translating into something violent. So it's an interesting one. I know me from Padova, when we play Vicenza, that's a much more heated thing than the derby. So definitely a very interesting one. You know, when we were talking about the analysis of the derby, you know, for so many years, us that really love culture and Serie A, we're always like Milan and Inter are back. And then after a while, we get disappointed. So hopefully this is the beginning. I think there are certainly a lot of things hinting that both clubs are more than on the right track to be back to once they were. And I think then the derby is going to become an even bigger deal than it is now.
All right. David, next Twitter question. Would you prefer to see teams like Inter and Juve work together or continue their fierce rivalry?
It's a good question. And for me, it's like, you know, I try to look at it as, you know, what would help the league more? And I think, you know, there are definitely some advantages for top clubs and leagues collaborating on things at the federal league level. I think there's definitely a lot to that. You know, teams working together, like on TV contracts and things of that nature. And then, you know, when picking who the president of the federation will, I mean, I definitely think there is some advantages to that. But I'm also not a huge fan of like the kumbaya and everyone loves each other, which we see especially in the NBA. Now it seems everyone's so much friends with one another. There's really no rivalries. And, you know, I asked myself, you know, would this kumbaya and good, you know, business deals between clubs benefit Serie A? Yeah, but I actually think a fierce rivalry like we used to have between Juve and Inter is better for the league. I think, you know, the only thing that, well, there's a couple of things, but the thing that Serie A more than anything probably needs to get their brand even further up is to have a real, real rival for Juve. And I think Napoli and Roma have done a good job within their limitations, but we're going to need Inter or Milan to get back. Obviously, there's much more bad blood, at least at the fan level, between Juve and Inter. But it seems, you know, that between the presidents, like Andrea Agnelli was sponsoring former Inter president Moratti to be the new Fiji Chi president. I mean, that wouldn't have happened years ago for sure. So it's an interesting question, but I prefer the fierce rivalries. What about you, Alex? I think I have a feeling I know what your answer is going to be.
Oh, absolutely. I need the fierce rivalries. I was born on Red Sox-Yankees, which is just, in my opinion, when that rivalry is at its highest, it's at its best. I think it's the best rivalry in sports, and I'm taking into account the audience I'm speaking to, David, but I'm only saying it because that was a fierce, fierce rivalry. I love fierce rivalries, and I totally agree with what you said about the NBA. I love the NBA. It's probably like my most favorite sport in terms of I started watching from an early age and I still love it now, but it is so buddy-buddy. They all go out to dinner with each other. There's no, the only type of rivalry they have now is when a player likes another player's wife's photo on Instagram and they get a little ridiculous social media rivalry. I hate what the NBA has become from a social aspect. So yes, give me the fierce rivalry any day of the week. So David, next Twitter question. Which teams have been deceivingly good or bad this season in Serie A?
So good question. And we've talked a little bit about this, but maybe with the international break, some people forgot. And I was trying to go in a different direction, but I go back to the fact that underrated in a good way is Sampdoria. We've talked a lot about their attackers, De Frel having, you know, real comeback season, Quagliarella being really good, but Sampdoria's defense has been remarkable. Right now they have the best defense in Serie A. Anderson, their young Danish center back's a great story, and I think that's not talked enough about it. And even I'm guilty of this. I mean, I called their manager Gianpaolo the striker whisperer, but his defense been just as good. And now on the flip side, Genoa, their crosstown rival, we talked about it a little bit before. I mean, I found the decision to fire their manager Ballardini to be absolutely absurd. They have 10 more points than this time last season. Piontek's been sensational. You know, there are conspiracy theories that Juve was behind the Ballardini firing because supposedly Genoa wasn't playing Favilli enough, but I mean, Juve has a buyback on Favilli. It's not like they totally own him. And quite frankly, their former manager who replaced Ballardini, Juric, is one of the few managers that has beaten Juve in recent years. So all these conspiracy theories, I get where they come from, but I think this overshadowed. Like, I get it. I mean, it was a shocking decision that Ballardini was let go. I think it had to do more with a personality conflict with Preziosi, the president. And I'm going to have a bold prediction. I think Ballardini is going to be back at Genoa at some point this season. I'm really sorry because one of my colleagues on the Marzio side is the son of Ivan Juric, so I am rooting for Juric, but that's kind of my prediction. I think Ballardini is going to come back, and that to me is one of the most puzzling things in a bad way that we've seen in Serie A this season.
All right. All right, David, next Twitter question. How do you rate Serie A's team's chances to win the Champions League this season?
So look, you know, there's definitely been a revival. We've seen in the coefficients that he has surpassed the Premier League. Let's see how long does that last. There are a lot of things that you can point to that are encouraging. We had Napoli that under Sarri, and this was a decision that I, a firm believer, happened above Sarri's pay grade. They thought they had a chance at the Scudetto. We talked about it ad nauseum. I'm not going to repeat it there, but Ancelotti definitely comes with a DNA, Champions League DNA from his Milan days and the other teams he's managed as well. So Napoli has a much better profile there. We know Roma, the amazing run they had last year and what that did to their experience in the Champions League, which helps. But I don't see those teams realistically as contenders. Inter not as well either, although they're off to a great start. I think, you know, Inter would need at least three or four volcanoes around Europe to go off and really disrupt their opposing team so they can make a deep run to, say, the final or winning at all. So to me, it really comes down to Juve or bust as far as the Serie A team winning this season the Champions League. And we've talked about it. I mean, you, Alex, said that you only think Man City is the only team that you can say is probably better than Juve. We've seen Real Madrid, Bayern Munich struggle this season. I think Liverpool's definitely a contender, but I think Juve is definitely on the very short list of the favorites. So hopefully we'll have more potential Serie A contenders for the Champions League. There's definitely a lot of encouraging signs there.
Absolutely. All right, David, next Twitter question is, who would be a better fit at Manchester United, Paratici or Morata?
So for me, this is very simple. Anyone who knows what Marotta and Paratici did at Juve can kind of figure out what the answer is here. Marotta's available. Juve let him go. Paratici isn't available now. It doesn't sound like it will be anytime soon. It sounds like one of the reasons that, you know, Marotta was let go is they wanted to give more responsibility to Paratici, who's much younger. He's closer in age to all the other directors at Juve, and especially President Andrea Agnelli, who's having more of a central role at the club. But aside on who's available or not, let's say they were hypothetically both available. Marotta's a finance guy. He used to be a sporting director type at the beginning of his career, but he became much more of an administrator, finance guy, big picture. And I think he did a fantastic job at Juve. All the things he got criticized for, the loans with option to buy and all that, like that's what allowed Juve in the long run to be in such good shape they could afford Ronaldo. So you got to ask yourself, does Manchester United really need that? Someone that's, you know, really good with budgets and careful with that? Probably not. I think what Manchester United needs a lot more is someone that can help them pick the right players, and that would be Paratici. He is the guy that does that at Juve. I remember when a former Juve head of scouting, Ribalta, you know, left Juve to go to Manchester United, and everyone at Man United got so excited. It was like, oh, it's the second coming. This guy is all that. It's like, if you know anything about Juve, it was Paratici who did that stuff. Ribalta helped a little bit. Doesn't seem like he did a huge impact, and he left Manchester United. So of the two, hypothetically, it would be Paratici. I have a hard time imagining Juve letting him go. I have a hard thing, you know, with all due respect to Manchester United right now, I mean, Juve at least probably a better job right now. The ownership situation is definitely better at Juve. But if you were looking at the types of attributes, definitely someone like Paratici is needed much more at Man United.
Okay. David, how about this question? If Max Allegri wins the Champions League, where would you rank him historically speaking?
And to me, I was thinking about this. To me, if Allegri wins the Champions League, to me, he gets close to the Lippi level. Now, you know, Lippi won a Champions League at Juve. He obviously won the World Cup. In fairness to Allegri, he's never had the opportunity to compete in the World Cup. And even if he were to take over the Azzurri now, I mean, the squad he'd be taking over now would be much closer to the one Lippi took to South Africa than the one that Lippi won with in Germany 4 years before. So I think, you know, if Allegri wins the Champions League, to me, he gets close to that level. I've always been a big fan about Allegri. I think, you know, Allegri was really the first person at Juve that started talking about doing well in Europe. I think it was smart on his part. He replaced Conte, who kind of always said, oh, the Champions League, we can't compete there. Conte famously said, no Italian team's going to even make it to the semifinals for a long time. And then Allegri arrives and goes to the final. But Allegri from the get-go was like, Juve needs to be in the top eight in Europe consistently. And I think he started changing the culture. I think you talk about it, Alex, all the time, how versatile and tactically smart he is. I think it really shows in the Champions League. So, yeah, I think, look, that if he does that, you know, everyone, that's how you always pick on Juve and Allegri. It's like, oh, you make the final only to lose it. But I always say, you know, yeah, that you might make fun of making the final, but that's certainly better than not making the final because, A, you make a ton more revenues, and that's what helped Juve a ton. And if you want to make fun for a team that made the finals, I mean, what are you going to say about teams that don't even get out of the group stage? So I think that would really be the cherry on top, and that would fully get Allegri off, you know, the crap list from Milan fans and even the Juve fans that doubt him.
All right, David, how about this for a Twitter question? If you could give one piece of advice to an aspiring journalist, what would it be?
Great question. And even yesterday, I got a very, and you can look at it on my timeline, I got a very interesting question on conservative journalists and whatnot. So it's a hot topic. So the first thing I'll tell you is, you know, if you want to, what advice would I give to an aspiring journalist? The first thing I do is let's define what a journalist is. Like, I got to be honest, when people refer to me as a journalist, I don't know if I agree. Actually, I don't agree. Because to me, there's a big difference between a reporter, a pundit, someone that writes columns. Like Di Marzio is an example, and he's just him because he's the easiest. Like, he's a fantastic reporter. The guy knows exactly what's going on in his field with transfers. He works on his sources all the time. I've spent time with Gianluca a few times, always on his cell phone, always working on stories, talking to different people. He hears something, reaches out to someone to confirm if it's true or not. You know, people send him tips, but then he decides, okay, am I being used here in a negotiation? Is this real or not? To me, that's journalism. To me, journalism is also being present at the game, being present at the event, covering it. To me, that's what journalism is. Now, there's punditry and columns, and I view myself a lot more than that. Like, I mean, on a very rare occasion do I do what I would call journalism. Like, it's so rare that it's not even worth mentioning. But, you know, I'm lucky enough that there's a decent amount of people that care to hear my opinion on things or try to analyze a situation. And, you know, to me, that's punditry and being a columnist. And I guess that is kind of journalism, but that's very different. So the first advice I would give to someone that wants to be an aspiring journalist to decide, are you going to be one or the other? And it's a completely different skill set. So if you want to be the type of journalist, and I put that in air quote, that I am, because again, I don't consider myself that. I consider myself a writer more than anything else. Even writing the podcast is something I enjoy even more than like hosting it and recording it with you, is you have to write all the time. Like, I cannot stress this enough. You know, both my parents are classical music musicians. And, you know, one thing that I always remember of being around my dad as a kid is he was just always practicing every morning. And my dad's pretty well established in his field as a violinist. And he used to always practice his skills. And I'd be with him in the morning. And he used to tell me, you know, this is how I become good. Like, every day I do this. And I try to do that every day. Like, even on Di Marzio's site, like, you know, I get the article in Italian, and instead of doing word-for-word translation, I just take the main points. If it's an interview, I take the main quotes and write around those quotes, like an intro and not, and that's my practice. That's what makes when I write an article for The Athletic, a Euro Fantasy game, or ESPN during the transfer window, that much easier. You just have to write all the time. To me, it doesn't matter if no one's reading what you do, like, that's perfectly fine. You just need to get good at it. Like, I'm much better at doing this podcast because I've done over 160 of these. I'm sure you, Alex, are getting much better at your videos because you do them a lot. So it's all about the consistency. And I think, you know, you have to open yourself from feedback, not from trolls, but from people that know things or that can help you get better. Nobody wants to be told that they suck. But if someone can give you a tip on how to get better, you have to be receptive to that. And also, I think it's the one thing that I try to do with anything like the podcast, when I give an opinion or when I write an article. If I have a firm belief on something, I always ask myself, what would someone that disagrees with this point, what would be the first thing they would say to counter what I have to say? And that helps me write my articles, helps me prepare for the podcast better. So I was asked for one piece of advice. I gave a lot. So hopefully you guys can get something out of that.
And that's the advantage of being able to play back these answers over and over and over. All right, David, last Twitter question, and I assume you'll like this one. Could De Niro or Pacino be as good as Gandolfini in a TV mob series?
Great question. And a lot of people liked, we were talking about Sopranos on Tuesday. It's a great question. So let me phrase it this way. I think Gandolfini was so brilliant as Tony Soprano that that was really the beginning of the golden age of TV. There was Oz before. That opened up the door for a TV show to really think bigger, be more violent, be more explicit, and Sopranos did a great job from that. But Gandolfini, to me, is the best TV character probably ever. I think, you know, Gandolfini was just great, and I think without Gandolfini, we wouldn't be talking about the golden age of TV. We wouldn't be talking about the possibility of De Niro or Pacino being in a series like that, because before, movies were seen as the important thing and TV was kind of like, eh. So, you know, it's like when George Clooney went from ER to the movies, that was a massive step up for him. And when an actor wasn't, you know, popular enough to headline a movie, that he'd go do a TV show, that was seen as a massive step back. And I actually think these days that's almost not the case anymore. It's almost seen as a really prestige thing to be on a great TV show. So with that preamble out of the way, look, Gandolfini was incredible. Do I think Sopranos would have been better with De Niro or Pacino in that role? It's kind of hard to say. It would have been very interesting to see that. So I'm not sure. I mean, I'm certain they could have hacked it. You know, now they're a little bit older. Maybe they could play the old Don. So let's see there. On the topic of De Niro and Pacino, I've been rewatching Heat pretty often when it's on cable. And I've been telling myself, and I wish they would have done this, it's too late now, the best sequel to Heat would have been Pacino and De Niro playing the opposite role. So Pacino playing De Niro's role and vice versa, and keep everything else the same. I would have loved to see that even more than seeing them in a TV show like Sopranos. So as always, we'll have a new podcast on Monday. We're going to start recapping Serie A, get ready for the Champions League. So send us in questions with the CalcioLand hashtag. As you can tell, we love the journalism and pop culture ones as well. Also want to take this opportunity to thank anyone who leaves us a review. Those, I cannot stress enough how important they are. I know you hear me say this all the time, but if you like what we do, Alex and I put a lot of work into this. Right now, it's a free podcast. The best way to help us grow is to leave that rating on iTunes. Look in the podcast app, search for CalcioLand, scroll down, leave 5 stars, leave us a review. We really appreciate it. We really appreciate you tweeting about the show so you get your followers to listen. And now let's close on Milan and have a great derby, everyone. And we look forward to chatting with you on Monday. Okay, so with the derby coming, we felt we had a great excuse to touch base on both Inter and Milan. And on Tuesday's show, we took a deep dive on Inter with my colleague from the Marzio site, Gabriele Romano. And for the Milan part, I always look to kind of bring in different guests from Milan. There's a lot of great people that cover Milan, obviously a huge club with a following all over the world. So for this week, I tapped Milan Weekly Podcast, which is a podcast I really enjoy listening. It's been growing a lot. They have Gab Marcotti on this week. A lot of the quotes that he gave were then reported on a bunch of sites. So today we are joined by Stefano Polillo. You guys on the podcast that listen to Milan Weekly Pod, I know him as Steve there. He does a fantastic job. For those of you that aren't familiar with their podcast, they're also the English voice of Radio Rossonera, which is a radio station in Italy dedicated just to Milan. They really do superb work there. So, Steve, it's a real pleasure to have you on. Welcome to Calcioland.
Thank you very much, David and Alex. It's a pleasure for me to represent Milan Weekly Pod on your fantastic show that I continuously listen to almost everywhere that I am, in the car, even sometimes in the washroom. We're just continuously listening to Calcioland all the time.
Awesome. Thank you so much. So we actually, you are in a way the second guest we've had from the podcast, because we had the Presidente Marcello. We had him on our special on the Milan ownership last year. So it's good to have someone else from the Milan Weekly Pod family. So Steve, let's start out very generic, and then we're going to narrow down more to the derby itself. And then I'm going to ask you some questions on your podcast. You know, a lot of our listeners have their own podcast and always like to talk about some tips, some things that have worked well, and your podcast has grown a lot. So let's start, you know, with as generic as we can. Give me your assessment of Milan's season so far. If I had told you that Milan was in this position where they are now, right when the season started, would you have been satisfied or not?
I think I have to say that I have to be satisfied with that. Just given the fact with the whole soap opera that was the previous ownership with Mr. Yong Hong Lee, wherever he is right now, I didn't expect Milan or Elliott Group to come in and actually make the statement that they were going to make, and transferring onto the pitch, right? We did have a little bit of a hiccup the first game of the season due to that tragedy in Genoa, which just had the season start a little bit differently than we would have liked to. But to be very honest with you, if you told me that Milan would be sitting at these amount of points at this time in the year, I would be satisfied of it. Now, my assessment of Milan itself, I can't wrap my head on exactly why this team is so fragile mentally, and I think that's the part that frustrates me the most. Unfortunately, sometimes there's just in games or periods of game, it's almost like they just forget that they are playing for Milan, right? And they lose some sort of aspect of like how important this team is, not only to the Milan fans and to the actual city of Milan, and it's just lapses of concentration. And with someone like Gattuso at the helm, I'm still amazed on how that's continuing to happen, right? So
perfect segue. Sounds like you are someone that does a podcast. I was going to ask you about Gattuso next. And, you know, I'm a firm believer that I saw enough from Gattuso in the second half of last season that he at least at bare minimum deserved the right to start the season. There was a stretch that was rough not that long ago. Milan seems, though, to have been, gotten back on track. So let me ask you, have you seen enough that you think, at least for the foreseeable future, Gattuso should be the coach of the team?
Yeah, so that's a fantastic question, and it's something that myself, Vince, and sometimes we call on El Presidente when he's not counting his money. We talk about it a lot, right? So I'm a big fan of Gattuso, the player, always have been. He's Calabrese like me. So I have that emotional connection to him and La Grinta and the passion that he shows for the shirt. I cannot disagree with that. As a manager, I agree with what you said. I think he showed enough last year to be able to start the season this year. But unfortunately for me, and this is my personal opinion, I don't think he's showed us enough on the tactical side that this is something that he can continue in a long-term project. Now, given the fact that he does have some experience, but not at a humongous seat that is the AC Milan manager's bench at the San Siro, right? I think he's going to improve. Will Elliott and the new ownership group have the patience to ride it out for the foreseeable future and for seasons to come? I hope. I hope. And when they appointed Gattuso, both myself and Vinny, we said it multiple times, please, Gattuso, prove us wrong. Prove us wrong. And for the latter part of the last season, he did. And this season here, he is starting to make some tactical adjustments. We're going to have to live with the mistakes that are made. And I'm an armchair quarterback, right? I never played professional. I love the game. I watch it. I think I enjoy the tactical part of the game. It's something that's always interests me. But I see some decisions that are made that, unfortunately, I cannot say that he is always making that tactical decision that's best for me, man.
So now let's talk about two players that I find quite intriguing. So this summer, the move with Bonucci going back to Juve and Higuain going to Milan, there was a lot of talk about Caldara on both sides of things. You know, a lot of Juve fans really upset. They looked at their aging defense. They saw Caldara as the future go-to guy. At Milan, it was like, okay, now we basically have the future defense of the Italian national team with us. And now Caldara at first, Gattuso, and I think he was right, was trying to ease him in very slowly. This is something that we saw Allegri do at Juve to set him up to succeed with a change of formation. And then he's had battled injuries recently. But in the interim, we've seen Musacchio, who came, you know, with a pretty good reputation from Spain, and he had an up-and-down first season. I think he's been pretty impressive. So tell me a little bit about what you've seen from Musacchio, and you think he's been good enough that Caldara should start wondering, geez, you know, I left Juve partly because I wanted to play more, and maybe it won't be as easy as Milan. So how do you see that situation?
Yeah, so I couldn't come on your show and not throw a little jab at the Juventus fans. Juventus fans always think that they have the next coming of Beckenbauer in their team, right? So it's only normal that as soon as you move a younger piece like Caldara out of their team, they're going to get a little bit up in arms, right? But, you know, Juve has a wealth of talent there, and I think that they made that, well, Milan forced them. They wanted them to include Caldara in the deal, and I think it's a good move. Musacchio has impressed, I have to say. Last year, it looked like he was just a little bit unsure. I think coming onto the team as early as he did as one of the first signings, and then, hey, surprise, we're also going to take one of the best defenders in Italy, Bonucci, and we're going to put him in the team. We also have Romagnoli, who's, let's say, the poster child of the Milan defense for years to come. I think that might have just caused him to go in the wrong direction and maybe second guess his skills. With Bonucci going back to Juve, I think maybe it's he regained some confidence and said, you know what, now that Gattuso is giving me the tap on the shoulder, that I'm going to start alongside Romagnoli until this young kid Caldara gets his feet wet, and we're going to be able to introduce him into the team. I think that changed his whole mindset, and I think he makes a good first pass. Sometimes he does look a little bit lost, and last year, Bonucci and Romagnoli at the beginning of the year, they look lost together, so it could be Romagnoli and Musacchio just creating that partnership. But I like what I see from Musacchio, but I think that the future for Milan is a back line of Romagnoli and Caldara. I think watching Caldara at Atalanta, he has a lot of offensive upside. He's dangerous on set pieces. He's dangerous on corner kicks. I think he has a lot of upside. For me, a big thing with Caldara coming from Atalanta, where they're very 3-5-2 heavy, it might be a little bit of an adjustment process for him for that back four. But I think the future of Milan, just setting aside how good Musacchio has been, has to be Romagnoli and Caldara.
Okay, and obviously depth's important. The more good players Milan has, the better for them long term. And speaking of that, you know, one thing that I always like to think about is, you know, I feel like a lot of fans of their own team, you watch the players a lot. I think sometimes it's easy to get enamored with some of the players that you see often. But when I try to, you know, to rank teams and say, okay, what does Milan need to do to get to the next level? I always ask myself, you know, which of their current players could, say, start on Napoli, Inter, and Roma? And then for those teams, I'm like, okay, if those teams want to compete with Juve, which of those players could start for Juve? So I try not to look at them in the vacuum of the team itself. So you follow Milan very closely. If Milan gets back to being where Milan belongs, so Scudetto contender, a team that consistently goes to the Champions League, which of the current players that we see now could be part of that core?
That's a fantastic question again. That's why I love listening to your show. And I came in here like we always do on Milan Weekly Podcast. I like to really shoot from the hip. So for me, Romagnoli is a staple point. I think Caldara is another staple point, because I'm a firm believer that if your back line is in order, a lot of things fall into play, right? Higuain as well, even though he's a little bit long in the tooth in age, but I think he's going to play an important part as presently the main striker on Milan's side, and also as a mentor to Cutrone, who has to be another staple point of this project, because of basically he came through the academy and he's lived Milan from day one, right? So his passion is contagious. I'm guilty as well, David and Alex, of falling in love with certain players. But sometimes when you have to take a step back and say, you know what, there can only be a certain amount of players that are going to be with your project for 5 to 10 years, right? I would include on a sidebar there Donnarumma, just because of his age as well. But unfortunately, with Donnarumma at that high price tag, at a certain point, I think Milan will have to make a decision on whether they can keep him, right? Is his value going to go down? Can we use that money to, let's say, bolster the midfield, where unfortunately right now, that's one of the crucial parts of Milan. For me, I appreciate all that Billy has done, but we need that general, that temperament in the midfield that can control the tempo of the game, slow it down when we need to, pick it up when we can. I don't think that we have that right now. So my next foundation of my Milan project would be really to address that midfield and what we can do to create a solid foundation in the midfield, because that affects the back line as well. You've seen it this year, right? If we lose the midfield, our back line looks like it's in shambles all the time, right? So, and I don't think that's a true reflection on the back line or Donnarumma, but I think that next staple point in the Milan project would have to be someone in the center of the pitch that can control.
Okay, so Steve, you mentioned earlier the Elliott Fund, and I wanted to talk to you about this. Now, I never believed in the Chinese Milan ever. There was always so many red flags to me that jumped out at me. And I was a firm believer, and I've been saying this since this time last year, that the sooner the Elliott Fund would take over Milan, the better it would be for them. And I have to say, they've done at least as well as I would have expected, probably better. So let me get your take on that. What's been your impression? And do you feel a lot more energized? Did you have a lot more hope than, say, in previous years? Because even before the Chinese Milan, I mean, we went through some years where Berlusconi was really spending no money. And I thought Galliani got too much criticism. And there's only so much you can do with free transfers alone. So tell me about the vibe as someone who supports Milan and covers Milan since the Elliott Fund took over.
Yeah, so for that, the Elliott Fund, pleasantly surprised. You know, there was always that kind of like pointing the finger to the Elliott Fund. They're a vulture fund. They want to strip it down. They want to they're in it just for the money. And at first, I was like, wow, what's going to happen with Milan, right? We just went through something with Yong Hong Lee, which I would like to totally admit that I basically was fooled completely from beginning to end. I know I don't like someone, we say it all the time, right? We're not professionals on Milan Weekly podcast, and nor do we pretend to be, but we were blindsided completely by Yong Hong Lee, right? And a bit of the words from Fassoni as well. But the Elliott Fund taking over and what they've done right now with addressing Leonardo, bringing back Leonardo, convincing Maldini to come back, and also investing in the team. I'm presently surprised, right? I don't like to get too much into financials because, like I always say, I don't have all the information all the time, and whether what I'm reading is it true or not. But what I read on the Elliott Fund is they're really a fund that wants to make money, right? And it's the first time they step into the sports arena. So I'm just very curious to see what continues to happen with the Elliott Fund, you know, and making a signing like Paquetá midway through the season from the Brazilian league. It's just showing the fans and giving the fans some sort of energy that we've lacked for at least, no joke, 7 years, right? So anybody would tell you that it's less than 7 years. I have to say that maybe you missed a couple of years there because it's been tough. As a Milan fan going through the ownership problems that Don Silvio had with Il Condor, Galliani, who I will eternally be grateful to those two gentlemen because they've given us so much. But at the end, you just saw we just didn't have enough. I don't know if it was FinVest that cut the Interact card or money card for Berlusconi and Galliani, but you know, the Kevin Constance and the Irby Emanuelson, with all due respect, I don't want to see them on my Milan anymore. So.
Okay. Yeah, I certainly agree with you. And look, the Elliott Fund, you know, all the things on the Vulture Fund, I think, you know, and I was guilty of that a little bit too. But as you said, you know, they are about making money and they have to make Milan into a much more palatable asset than what they inherited. And they're certainly well on track for that. So you hinted already at Paquetá. I got to be honest, I just watched highlights. So I don't feel like I can really speak too much about him. I've asked a few people that cover Brazilian football on him. What have you heard, and how do you think he could help the team? And he's going to come in December to start training with the team.
Yeah, so for Paquetá, David, to be very honest with you, if you haven't heard a lot from him, I follow your work all the time. I usually get a lot of my information from you and your articles. I have to be very honest, I have not heard a lot about Paquetá as well. I've seen probably the same videos that you've had. One video that stuck out, to be very honest with you, I don't know if you had the chance to see it. It was not even him, you know, performing a traditional Brazilian samba move or scoring a goal. I saw just one video where he was running around in pressing, and he was not stopping. He was just continuously running after the ball. He almost looked like a man who was on a mission to retrieve a ball that he wanted to give back to his little boy or something. It was something that I haven't seen that in the Brazilian league, and it's a video that stayed with me. But from what I've read, it looks like he's a playmaker in the middle of the pitch. You know, the Brazilians, Kaká, has said nice things about Paquetá. But unfortunately, more than that, I'm not going to pretend to know exactly the best things that he brings. But, you know, with Leonardo, we had that inner channel to these Brazilian talents. And he was part of bringing over Kaká to Milan. I'm not saying Paquetá is going to be another Kaká because there's going to only be one. But if he can make his mark even 75% to 80% of what Kaká did, you know, I'll take it in a heartbeat, right? So.
Yeah, well, I can tell you the good news about Paquetá is Guru Nicky, my favorite Milan fan, is ecstatic. He's DM'd me a ton of times, and he spelled his name already in four different ways. So that's usually how I judge Milan players, is how many different spellings will Guru give us. And I think there's great potential here. So now let's move to the derby. So I want to ask you a couple of questions before I put you on the spot for the prediction. I want to ask you, what do you think is the most important matchup in this derby. And this doesn't necessarily have to be the matchup that Milan has to win the derby, but just in general, the one that you think is the key in the match.
For me, the matchup that's the most important, I'm split 50-50 down the middle. I'm not going to give everybody the traditional, you know, Higuain versus Icardi, the derby dell'Argentina, because those guys, for them to be effective, someone's got to get them the ball, right? For me, I'm split between the midfield battle. So, you know, Brozovic and Nainggolan or whatever Inter wants to put on the pitch in the middle of the park with what we're going to field, right? So Biglia, Kessié, and either make it be Bonaventura in the midfield, because he's Bonaventura is the derby killer, seems to always score in the derby. But I think the midfield battle is a huge, huge battle that needs to be, you know, whoever wins the midfield, I think will be able to service either or striker enough to create the chances that are needed for this for a game of this magnitude, right? And it's also the other half that I'm torn about, and you know, Inter with Perisic and whoever else they want to line up on the other mezzala, you know, Keta Blade, you know, those guys are have a lot of speed, and unfortunately sometimes Milan on their right and left back there, you know, Ricardo Rodriguez has been faulted a couple of times to be a little bit mistake prone on the defensive end. Calabria, Abate have their own problems. That's another interesting matchup for me. Is the, you know, Inter builds a lot from the sides and tries to get the balls to Icardi in dangerous places. And I think a lot of those chances are going to come from their wingers versus our backs, right? So and also the other way around, right? You know, Inter is. I struggled sometimes with their backs, and it's for our wingers to get the Higuain in dangerous positions, right? But the derby, you know, traditionally is always the team that is less informed seems to get some character in this game, right? And it's going to be interesting because in the first time in a long time, both teams look like they're both in form, right? So I'm really excited for this. So is everybody at Milan Club Montreal. Presidente, he's shining up his gold cane to walk in and have everybody kiss his ring like the Godfather. So we're all ready for that. You know?
So is he back from Aruba for this? Did he come back from the yacht, or is he going to helicopter in for this?
Yeah. So Presidente is back from Aruba. He's presently now. He's getting ready to listen to your podcast or something else. You know, but during the
did
day,
he come back for like the legal weed? Did he want to be there for the first day for legal weed in Canada more than the derby?
No,
Presidente
doesn't dip into the legal weed there. We don't want to see him on any cannabis or oils. It's enough of him with how he is right now, right? We don't want to excite him too much.
Okay. So now let me put you on the spot. You made a good point. I always say in the derby, and not just Milan, the one in Rome too, I always go with the underdog. But as you said, you know, both teams, it's kind of hard to say who is the underdog now. I guess you could say Inter, you know, they've been a little bit better in recent years. So let me put you on the spot. What do you think is going to happen Sunday night?
Sunday night for the derby, I think it's going to be 2-1 Milan victory.
Hey, nice and simple. That's what I like. So let's go to your podcast. Let's talk a little bit about it. So it's called Milan Weekly Podcast. As I mentioned, you guys are affiliated with Radio Rossonera. We do have some listeners in Italy. A lot of them tuning in for Thousand Names Predictions. And it's very popular in Italy. And I think it's great that you guys have an affiliation with Radio Rossonera. So tell me a little bit what type of content, if some of the Calcioland listeners, and I hope a lot of them start listening to your podcast and leave them ratings. They need we need to get them some more ratings there. What would they expect? What would a typical episode sound like?
Yeah, so for Milan Weekly Podcast, guys, to be very honest with you, we keep it real. We try to be unbiased. You know, when we talk, it's Milan heavy, but we love to dip into certain Serie A topics. So we try to keep it real, right? We want the listeners to value our opinion and see where our opinion is coming from. We try to interact with the social media lounge, get some questions from our guests, so that that we can have some more topics to talk about and get their opinion on certain things. We want the best for Milan, right? So we want to keep the English-speaking Milan fans informed about what we're getting from all our Italian counterparts, right? So same thing like Radio Rossonera, which they do fantastic work, and who knows when they sleep. We try to take that information that we get from, you know, yourself and everybody else on social media and, you know, bring up certain topics and make it, keep it loose on the podcast. It's nothing too formal. Well, we constantly have to make fun of El Presidente, who does a fantastic job on his segment for the presidential points. He pretty much gives us all the material, and we don't go into the podcast with anything written down. We just sit down face to face, me and Vinny, probably sometimes with a bottle of Grappa Jacopo Poli, and talk Milan. And, you know, 45 minutes to 60 minutes later, the podcast is over, you know. And when we have the great ability to have a fantastic
guest. Is that the bottle over too or no?
The bottle, sometimes, David, yes, sometimes no. It depends how bad Milan's doing, right? So, you know, one day we would like to have you, David, and you, Alex, as guests on Milan Weekly Podcast, and you could live it yourselves, right? So it's basically keeping it loose and keeping it easy, right? So.
Yeah, but look, I was very impressed. Like, I like the regular episodes, but I thought with Marcotti, you guys did a really nice job. So let's close on this. As I mentioned to you, a lot of our listeners have their own podcasts. They're thinking about doing their podcast. We get a lot of questions on things people can learn, and you've been doing it. You guys have over 50 episodes. I'm sure you've learned quite a few things along the way. So if you could give yourself advice as when you recorded your first podcast based on what you know now, what would that be?
The advice that I would give myself, again, just voice your opinion, right? Sometimes you're going to be wrong. Sometimes you're going to be right, you know, and never take anything personal, and always respect everybody's opinion, right? So because some people, I find that, you know, they have their own opinion. And when you take a step back and you don't take it personal and you read up on their stuff and where they're going with things, you learn, and you learn that, and you can take that that information and use it for another situation where you're voicing your opinion, but you're also considering that everybody else is going to have their own opinion. And that's how conversation is built. And that's how the podcast succeeds, right? So when you're set in stone in something, you know, you have your blinders on, and you won't be able to absorb the most likely positive information that you're receiving from someone else. That's what I would teach myself. And to stop screaming and stop smashing my table.
Okay, sounds good. So listen, Steve, it was an absolute pleasure having you on. It was a lot of fun. All Calcio Land listeners, you love Milan, you hate Milan. I think you'll get a lot out of the podcast that they put out. And again, thanks so much for joining us. And I look forward to chatting with you on your podcast and having you back on here, okay?
Thank you very much, David and Alex, for giving me the opportunity to be on and talking to all your fantastic listeners. I can't wait to listen.